episode 23 of Dead Zombie Podcast. Great to have you with us as always. Coming up, we've got a review of Crofton Perry Day 2008 held at Bressingham Steam Museum. Following my request on the last podcast, I'm pleased to say we've received a high number of emails this time, so we'll be reading through a couple of those with you. After that, we've got an interview with Mrs. Fox. Yes, Pamela Cundell is interviewed by Tony, and I have to say that's a fantastic interview, so I hope you really enjoyed that. And shortly after that, Tony and I round off the podcast by discussing this week's features episode, The Test. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com, and you can check out all of the latest Dad's Army news on our blog. That's www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. And I'm pleased to welcome Tony back to the podcast after a few podcast break. Hello, Tony. How you doing?
Hello, James. All is well, thank you.
Wonderful to have you back.
I didn't know I'd gone, but apparently.
We've had a couple of emails. The first three that I'm going to read have all got a rough theme running through them. See if you can detect that. The first one was a comment left on our website and says, "Great episode. It was really good to hear Frank Williams, and it sounded like a great trip." This is referring, of course, to the locations tour that formed podcast number 21, I think. "I found the interviews and chat about the locations and how they fitted into the various shows very interesting, and it was like being on the bus. Well done again, James. Good to hear Tony back again." He finishes off, "Happy anniversary as you mark the first year of podcasts."
Yay.
And that's from Ian Sherwood.
Yay.
I have to admit, I've completely forgotten when we'd started this, Tony, but it has been just over a year since we've been recording these half hours of drivel. Anyway, moving on to our next email from Helen Fortes from Broadstairs. Where's Broadstairs?
I think it's in Kent near Margate.
"Anyway, really enjoyed your podcast, lads, although I must ask the question, where has Tony got to? He hasn't been around since podcast 17. Not that I don't like James's presenting, but I really enjoy hearing the chat between you. Looking forward to your next podcast." And that's from Helen. So, Tony.
I think I'm in love.
Okay, Helen, you'll be receiving an email back from Tony directly. Our next email is from Liam. Thanks, Liam, for getting in touch. You sent us quite a long email. "Hi, James and Tony. I just thought I'd take this opportunity to send you a quick email about the podcast. I thoroughly enjoy your show, particularly the banter between yourself and Tony." Can you see the theme yet, Tony, here? Over the last three emails?
No.
No?
Never mind. No.
"I'm pleased that the sound quality has improved greatly. You also seem to have stopped using the weird sound thingy, which meant that when you spoke, you were on one channel, and when Tony spoke, he was on the other." So that's going back to our early podcast where I wasn't able to record in stereo. So I do think it sounds slightly better now.
Are you going to explain why you're a bit echoey tonight?
Yes, I suppose I should have said that, actually, at the beginning of the podcast. I am in a half-redecorated office. I've got no carpet here at the moment, hence the slightly echoey sound. But you'll be pleased to know, Tony, that unlike Manorin, I do not have a paper door. Anyway, to get back to Liam's email, he says he's been a regular listener since Christmas when he received his iPod as a gift. "I have downloaded and been working my way through the previous podcasts and have really enjoyed them all, although I got a bit lost and started listening to them in the wrong order. I have always loved Dad's Army, as well as all of other Perry and Crofts comedies, but never got around to purchasing any Dad's Army DVDs until the Dad's Army DVD collection came along. You know, the one with the magazine, which seemed like a good way to collect the DVDs. In hindsight, I'm not so sure." You collected those magazines
as well, didn't you?
Yeah,
I did. It allowed you to see some of the episodes on DVD for the first time, because that set came out before the recent complete set. It just takes up a lot of space, and it costs a lot more than the complete set that's out at the moment. What it means is you've just paid a lot of money for the magazines, really, but you couldn't get the magazines any other way.
I've never really sat there and read through the magazines. Did they contain a whole load of really interesting info, or was it just the bog-standard stuff you can find on a net somewhere?
I think they're quite good. I'm glad I've got mine, but as I say, it was quite expensive.
I wonder if they will turn into collectibles at some point, because presumably you can't get them now.
There's lots of them going on eBay.
Anyway, Liam continues, do you plan discussing the feature film at any stage? I personally didn't enjoy this as much as the TV shows, but it would be interesting to hear both your views on it. What do you think, Tony? Would you want to discuss that at some point?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Do you like the film particularly?
It's been widely criticised, hasn't it? I prefer the episodes, but there is stuff in the film that's quite good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'll always enjoy the TV series far more, but I would love to have been around when the film was actually at the cinema. But yes, certainly, Liam, we will be discussing it at some point, and I think what we'll probably do is dedicate a special podcast to that. Liam finishes off, one thing I didn't realise until I started listening to your podcast was that they were Dad's Army radio shows. I plan on purchasing these once I complete my Heidi High and the Ain't Half Hot Mum collections. And yes, I'd strongly recommend the radio shows to anyone, to any Dad's Army fan. I think I've said before on a podcast, I think some of the radio scripts are better than the TV versions. An alternative way of obtaining those is to join the Dad's Army Appreciation Society and then borrow them out of their library. Keep up the good work, chaps, Liam finishes. So thanks very much, Liam, for your email.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with James and Tony.
Crofton Perry Day 2008 was last month. It was held up at Brettingham Steam Museum. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there as planned, but Tony did attend. Did you have a good time, Tony?
Yeah, I had a brilliant time. I started off the day under instructions to record as much as possible. One of the first places I visited was the steam train to try and get the sound of whistle. I thought you might use that. And one of the best bits, I asked, they had a merry-go-round there, and I said, could I record the merry-go-round? And they invited me onto it, right into the middle of it, as it was going round to record the steam music.
Right, so let me get this right. This is Crofton Perry Day, and the first thing you record is, well, you actually ask permission to record the music from the carousel.
That's it, yeah, because I thought you'd have sort of some of the background sounds playing, just, anyway.
Okay. No, that's fine. Well, after you interviewed the carousel, what else did you do?
Went to the Barmy Army stand and recorded a brief interview with the man in charge there. And that was quite interesting because I knew nothing about that. I also interviewed the lovely Pamela Cundell, and she was utterly charming.
That's definitely coming up, and I have to say that is a fantastic interview. It's she was completely relaxed, I think, and she came up with a couple of wonderful anecdotes. And when I first listened to that interview, Tony, I was really smiling. The banter between the two of you is excellent, and she's obviously a wonderful person.
She is lovely. As with Jonesy's fans always there, I noticed a staff card there this year that was used in the episode of The Making of Private Pike. I wanted to ask Ian Lavender if he'd come over to the car with me so I could take a couple of pictures of him pushing the car, but Ian Lavender unfortunately had skipped off before I managed to ask that question. So.
Oh, that's a shame. You mentioned earlier you saw Jonesy's van. There were two vans, weren't there, this year? Or there were
the one from the film and the one from the episodes, you said.
First time that they'd had the van from the movie on display and restored as to how it was actually within the film. And if you want to see the photographs that Tony took, they're available on our blog, and that's at www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. Did you have a look around the regular exhibits? They've got a permanent mock-up of Warmington, haven't they, Dan?
Yes, I was in there again. Don't think much of it had changed since last time.
How true a representation is it to that which you see on telly?
I like the exhibition. I mean, on the hot sunny days, it's actually quite cool in there and a chance to get out of the sun. But now, the exhibition is very good. I don't think it's a true reflection of any of the actual sets that were used. But it's great.
I think you're absolutely right. I remember, again, I've been there the last couple of years, I remember the church hall being slightly on the small side, but I do remember when I first visited it, I actually thought it was the original set. I was amazed at what wonderful condition they kept it in. But of course, obviously, it is just a replica.
One of the things that I do remember seeing in the museum this year, in a small display case, they showed some of the original scripts.
It was a handwritten script,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, I just remember looking at it thinking, I want that.
I'm not surprised. Amazing. So, did you remember which episode it was?
I'm just trying to remember now. I'm struggling.
It's interesting, you see, because whenever you speak to Jimmy or David, or, you know, they always say that they don't remember which episode which one wrote, because they didn't actually write them physically together. They just came up with the ideas together, and then they went away and wrote individual episodes. But they always say they can't remember who wrote what. And I'm just wondering, if there was one particular script in one of their handwriting, then that would be one episode where we know who wrote it. So what would you say was your highlight, to sum up?
I think one of the highlights for me was being allowed into the room where the cast were allowed to go to relax, to get away from the crowds, and because of the pass that I've been given, they let me in, and I did appreciate that, and that's why I interviewed Pamela Kundell.
Okay, Tony, that's a great review of Brettingham. Thanks very much. And without any further ado, we'll go straight into your interview with Pamela Kundell.
I'm joined by Pamela Kundell, and I'm really grateful that, Pamela, you've put a couple of minutes aside just to speak to me. Pamela, let me ask you, when you got up this morning, what was it that made you decide, yep, I will come to Brettingham today?
I was jolly pleased to come to Brettingham, which I always am, because it's just something peculiarly for Dad's Army, and only Dad's Army alone. And everybody up here is so friendly, so wonderful, and you have such a good time, but they just love Dad's Army. And here we are, 40 years on, and they're still showing it on television.
Now, you could say that's amazing, but it's not amazing to me, because I know exactly why I like Dad's Army. Anytime I switch it on, choose an episode, and you have a laugh. So it's not amazing to me that people are still keen on it.
Yes, well, one little boy last year up in Brettingham, because you've got all these young people coming in, and he said, can I hold your hand, Mrs. Fox? Mummy says I can have my photograph taken with Mrs. Fox. So I said to him, why do you like Dad's Army? And this kid looked up at me and he said, because it's funny and not rude. Now, out of the mouths of babes, because that's what it is. It's a good laugh, lot of bumbling old men who get it right in the end. And also the patriotism of the war. That's the secret of it, I think.
Which do you think perhaps that some of that patriotism might have faded a bit in modern times?
Well, from the what there's like up today here on the Brettingham site, I would say no.
I'd say no from what you're
saying. You've got about 3,000 or 4,000 out there.
I've got to let you know, my nephew, that's my sister's young lad, he's 10 years old. I started sending him a couple of cassette tapes of just the audio shows, and he cannot go to sleep without listening to one of those. I think he's 10, he might be 11 now, but if by any chance someone tried to stop him listening to a half-hour episode before he went to bed, all hell would be let loose in that household.
Well, you see, I think this is what it is with these young people, and say, we've got all this new young audience, and I think they see it as a lot of bumbly old men, like their grandfathers or even their fathers, getting it right in the end. They go through all this, but they get it right. And this, I think, is what... And also not being rude. The kids don't want all this rudery.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it is. A lot of bumbling old men, which they equate to either their fathers or their grandfathers, and it comes out wonderful in the end.
Yeah. In all of the episodes, so like 80 television episodes, that's like 40 hours worth of television, Dad's Army gets close to being rude in a very few occasions, and it doesn't cross the line, really.
No.
It does verge on rudeness. It's just one or two little bits.
Yes, it never really
gets.
The Mrs. Fox character, you see, my character, she's a sort of flirtatious widow. We presume that Mr. Fox died, and she's a flirtatious widow, but she never goes too far. It's always just a bit, don't go over the boundary. Then that's what, again, is such fun and such love.
It's just a flashy woman, isn't
yes,
she?
Yes, yes.
There's the episode where Mannering comes round to see
that's
Mrs.
Wonderful.
Fox, and that scene is one of my favourites. The way that, well, your character embarrasses Mannering.
We got on very well, Arthur and I. When we were doing the stage show, he and his wife, Joan, who played the sister of Arthur, of Arnold Ridley.
Yes.
His Arnold Ridley's sister was Joan.
Sissy or Dolly, one of those
two. Who was Arthur's wife.
Yes.
In real life. And Frank and I, and Joan and Arthur, we used to go out for a meal after the show. A lot of times. We got on so well together. Not that particular scene, but later on, we went out of a double door, if you remember, in that scene, before I got married, and we got stuck in the door. Now, that was natural. We got stuck. David Croft, will you get it right before transmission, please? Arthur said to me, he said, I think that's a very funny moment, he said. Keep it in, we'll do it. So we did, because the studio went up and spoke. They fell about with laughter. So David couldn't say anything, because it was a big laugh. But that's how well Arthur and I got on. He could tell me to do things, and we could make our own. You know what I mean?
Sadly missed.
Yeah, he was lovely.
Sadly missed. I was
lovely man.
I was a youngster when Arthur Lowe died, and I hadn't got...
You hadn't got the real value of him.
By that point, I hadn't.
It could be difficult. It could be difficult. Oh, yes, yes, he could be. But he had a lovely side to him.
Yeah.
And his wife, Joan, was the one behind him. She was the one that sacrificed her career to look after Arthur. You know, she did everything for Arthur. She pushed him.
And from what I understand, some of that loyalty reversed itself and was paid back by Arthur to Joan both ways.
Oh, yes, he adored Joan. He adored her. And she was very good for him, because what he lacked in get up and go, she'd got, you see. She recognised the talent. And apparently, I don't know how, I mean, this has gone through the ages, I don't know how true it is, but it's supposed to be true, that Arthur, she was a sort of leading lady in the Fortescue Repertory Company in Leeds, just after the war. And she was kind of leading lady, and she was up in the dressing room one day when Frank Ford, she was interviewing a man for a part, and she heard the voice on the tannoy, and she said, that man is got the most, he's going to be a star. And it was Arthur. And he got booked, and she always tells the story, she said, Arthur was only getting £3 a week, but I was getting four. Because I was the leading lady. But she heard his voice over the tannoy when she was in the dressing room, and he was being auditioned. And she said, he's going to be a star.
Pamela Cundell, you've made my day. Thank you very much. I did promise I would keep this brief for your sake. But
thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. One final question, if I may. How long did Mrs. Fox and Corporal Jones stay together for after they got married?
How long?
How long did Mrs. Fox and Corporal Jones stay together for?
I do not know, darling. I can't answer that.
Pamela.
But I love Clive. He was great. He was lovely. Clive Dunn was lovely to work with.
We saw him a couple of years ago as well here. So.
Yes, he was here about... But he's now, I'm afraid, he's gone blind. It's so sad. I thought he might be here, but he's not. But he might come, because we're going to go to the War Museum in July, I think. Somebody has brought it. So he might come to that, perhaps.
Lovely.
So I'm hoping.
Lovely. Well, we might ask for another interview then.
We'll have a talk again.
If we're lucky. Pamela, thank you ever so much. Much obliged, and wish you all the best.
It's been a great pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really good bit of news that's come to light over the last couple of weeks or so is that the BBC is set to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Dad's Army. They're doing this by having a special one-hour programme that's called Jonathan Ross Salutes Dad's Army. Now, surprisingly, this is going to be hosted by Jonathan Ross, and is going to feature all of the surviving members of the cast, many of the production crew, and also a number of celebrity fans. Now, I don't know about you, Tony, but I'm very pleased that there's going to be a brand new programme, but I'm a little bit concerned about Jonathan Ross being chosen as the presenter.
I think he's very funny, a little bit rude sometimes, but no, very funny man.
Well, I'm all for him earning his salary, certainly. My only concern is that he's got such a domineering style, and his humour is so, although I find him very funny, usually, it's so different to the way, or to the humour seen in Dad's Army. I just hope he's not going to be, you know, a Jonathan Ross talks about Dad's Army and everybody else is excluded.
If he's a real fan of Dad's Army, then happy to have him do it. Not that it's up to me, but...
I would very much have liked to have seen someone like Paul Merton or Phil Jupitus present these. Not so in your face, if you know what I mean. I know Jonathan Ross is the big name, and he I think he is a fan. I mean, he calls himself a fan, and he regularly quotes lines from Dad's Army on his Radio 2 show, but I am slightly concerned at how this is going to turn out. You have actually got the opportunity now of applying for tickets to go and see this show recorded. It's being recorded in London on the 17th of July 2008, and if you want to apply for tickets, then the best thing to do is to go onto the blog. We mentioned it earlier, it's dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com, and all of the details are there. You can just follow a link that will take you to a particular web page whereby you can fill in your details and you stand a chance of being sent some tickets.
Oh, got him.
You've got what?
What are our things we were talking about?
Oh, the cricket balls.
Yeah, here, listen, I'll tell you what. £2.10 a piece, £4.10 for the pair.
I'm not paying that sort of money. Who ever heard of £2.10 for a cricket ball?
Listen, £2 a piece, I'm robbing myself.
You'd sell your own grandmother, wouldn't you?
Well, there's no market for her.
That was a clip from this week's featured episode, The Test. This was from Series 4, originally broadcast on the 27th of November, 1970. And this is quite a fan favourite, The Test. I've had quite a few listeners email in, actually asking us to discuss this one. And I was a little bit surprised, because I didn't really hold it in any real great esteem. But watching back over it again, it's certainly got some great lines. Tony, what's your first impressions of this episode?
Same as yours in what you said. It's not one that I would often choose to watch. Having watched it in preparation for this discussion, I quite like it.
The episode opens with the standard parade, this time just outside the church hall. I didn't think there was anything particularly special about this parade.
They throw a lot of the classic jokes into this episode, especially in the lineup.
There were lots and lots of different references. There was nothing unique, and of course that's what I think really makes one of these parade scenes, the standard parade scenes, really good, is when they have the complete blend of brand new novel and original humour mixed with the standard lines and gags. And I think you're quite right, it didn't really gel as well as some others there. Well, there's a couple of lines that I thought were marginally interesting. Mannerin has a go about Pike and Wilson's hair and the length of their... Now, that's not unique to this episode. He's done that before, I'm sure, but I was trying to think when I was watching the episode where that's mentioned, and...
The line in the other episode is, Mannerin says to Wilson, "Am I hurting you?" And Wilson is a bit confused, obviously, at that question. And Mannerin explains, "Well, I should be. I'm stepping on your back hair."
Yeah.
And Wilson says, "Oh, it's awfully funny," or something like that.
No, I agree. But can you remember which episode that's from?
Well, they're in their office, aren't they? They're in the side office.
But I do think that is one of the jokes that they do recycle, and it'll be interesting to find out whether or not there are any other mentions of the length of Wilson's hair. One of the other things that I think stands out on this episode, which... It's an undertone all the way through, and I think at the end of our discussion, I think, you know, I'll come back to this and we'll see whether or not it makes any more sense. But Mannerin is completely and utterly wrong throughout this entire episode. He's completely and utterly incompetent. Everything he tries goes wrong. Everything he says tends to be wrong. And yet he gets away with it, and he remains as an authority figure and in charge throughout the entire episode, and I think that must just reflect the writing, because in order for that to continue for half an hour and not actually trip over itself or make you think as a viewer this guy's just an idiot, then you have to write it really, really cleverly, and I think that's done perfectly, and that's shown very, very well clearly to start with when he's trying to teach everybody how to play cricket.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The bit that I love is where Mannering is giving one of these lectures on cricket, pretending to be an expert, and he just catches Wilson just sort of sneaking off for a minute or something, and Wilson says, I thought I'd just skip this lecture, because Wilson is the cricket expert.
It's a reflection once again on the classes, isn't it? Because Mannering puts so much effort into saying, well, I know about cricket, and you'll learn things from me if you listen to me. Whereas Wilson is so blasé, doesn't try and coach anybody, and he's effortlessly better than Mannering. And even in his style, later on in the episode where he turns up in that awful blazer.
Dazzling blazer.
Very dazzling, yes. It just shows, again, shows the audience that Wilson actually does know everything here, and had Mannering been an absolutely fantastic leader, he would have let Wilson take that lecture.
Wilson does ask, doesn't he, who's going to be captain?
Who's going to be captain? I am.
The thing I think that is funniest in this episode, well, it's not just in this scene, it's out of the entire episode, is where Pike bowls Mannering out. First time, absolutely perfect. You can see it coming a mile away, but obviously Mannering's built up all of this. You know, I mean, he's an expert batsman. He even says to Walker, "Yeah, this might fox you later on." That's right. And again, just the look that Walker gives, and it's just fantastic the way that Mannering is clearly not very good at cricket, and yet continually remains in charge.
Is that where he complains? The sun's very bright today, isn't it?
Sun's very bright today, isn't it?
The other point here is what he does with poor old Godfrey. The way he completely manipulates him, you know, chest in, look up, move down, then he moves Godfrey into an incredibly awkward position. And then Godfrey doesn't even get to hit the ball, because Jones turns up and he goes straight into bat and relieves Godfrey.
Well, that was the training scene. Next we move on to the changing room scene in this episode. And we're introduced in this part to Freddie Truman. They've actually got the real Freddie Truman playing E.C. Egan. James, just out of interest, a trivia question. E.C. Egan, did you catch what the E stood for?
Oh, yes, because Hodges mentioned it, didn't he?
Yes.
Was it Ernie?
Yes, well done.
It was. We also saw Don Estelle make one of his appearances as Gerald.
Yes, the small man from The Late Half Hot Mum.
Yes, the small man from It Ain't Half Hot Mum, yes. He stars Gerald, I think, in 3 episodes. I know he's in Don't Forget the Diver, and I can't remember the other one, but yes, he does speak. He's a semi-regular extra.
You don't want me to reach for the book, do you, at this point?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
I am anyway now.
Oh, typical. Well, I'll ask you another question then, so see if you can multitask. Fraser coming into the dressing room dressed as an undertaker. Did you get a chance to see James Beck's face? Because Fraser comes in and he shakes Walker's hand, all dressed, you know, in his top hat and undertaking gear. And the look on James Beck's face is fantastic. It's, considering the actor clearly knew what was happening, the incredulity that he shows is fascinating.
I remember Fraser sort of gliding past in the background in his undertaker. I don't remember Walker's expression though.
Oh, take a look at it if you get to see it again, because it's classic. It's one of those really good James Beck moments. And you know, he does it a few times in this episode. His physical portrayal of Walker is excellent. I mean, the example I just gave, and also earlier on when he was in the batting nets and he gives Mannering an incredible look when Mannering says, I'm going to put it right there. Again, it's just really done well. And I think that's used a little bit better later on. And again, we're jumping ahead, but we'll get to this part soon, where Fraser and Walker just commentate on how bad their team are doing in probably about 3 or 4 different little scenes that are just cut into the actual cricket match itself. And I think Walker does really well in this episode. I think he comes across as a good character, and he gets a lot more lines.
A final comment I've got about this, the changing room scene, is the bit about Mannering's trousers. I believe Arthur Lowe had it written into his contract that he didn't have to take his trousers off in any of the episodes. And I reckon that perhaps Perry and Croft have made a big thing about Mannering lending pair of his trousers to Pike.
It so happens that I've got a spare pair of flannels, and on this occasion I'm going to lend them to you. It's not the sort of thing that I like to do. Trousers are very personal things, you know. Not to be bandied about. All right. They're in my bag. Go and get them.
Thank you, sir.
does make me laugh, and I wonder if you are right. I wonder if you are right there. So we'll have to wait and see if anybody else enlightens us. If you know that, then please send us in an email. One final thing about this particular scene for me, and I referred earlier on to the class disparity between Wilson and Mannerin, and I think it was a very subtle little way of doing it. I mean, it's going back right to the beginning of the scene, and you remember when Mannerin walks in and Wilson is next to him, and they're almost, they're both facing the camera.
Yeah.
Wilson comes in with his blazer and his uniform and a cricket bag. He comes in with a big sports bag. Mannerin has got a large paper bag, and you can see Arthur Lowe looking at the sports bag that Wilson brings in, clearly thinking, "Oh, that's a sports bag, and I've got a paper bag." And again, that's a subtle little thing. It's not even referenced in dialogue.
During the cricket match, or during the first half of the cricket match, we've got Mannerin doing terrible bowling, and Hodges, who's batting, scores a four off one of them, and Mannerin says, "Just tempting him."
Four! Just tempting him.
Always making excuses for his poor play.
I just don't think Mannerin was very good at cricket. Full stop. The whole first half of the cricket match that we get to see is all of Mannerin's first over. And so it's the first six balls, and he's not very good at all. I don't think he actually has one decent bowl, and yet at no point does anyone challenge him on it, or says, "Oh, maybe somebody else should bowl."
Yeah, no, you're right.
Going back a little bit there, though, right at the very beginning, a couple of things with the vicar and the verger. You remember in the last scene that we were discussing, where they're inside the changing rooms, and the vicar comes in and tosses the coin.
Yes.
Seems very nervous and edgy, and, "Oh, I'm not used to doing this kind of thing." And yet, the first time when you cut to outside, all of a sudden the vicar and Frank Williams' performance is suddenly changed. He's much more relaxed, and he makes a jibe about the vicar's bicycle clips being left on. So I thought that was a little bit incongruous there. It didn't seem to flow as well as I thought it could.
Yeah, and they're clearly biased as well towards the wardens, which is...
Well, I wouldn't say the vicar is. I think the verger was clearly on Hodges' side, but the vicar didn't seem to be particularly biased one way or the other, I don't think. One thing I did find particularly unfunny, and I'm not a huge fan of the verger anyway, but he, the line, "Will you be saying grace, your reverence," or whatever, I just didn't think that was particularly funny.
Agree. Yeah.
The audience who were watching that part, a videotape as I guess it was, in the studio, disagreed with us then, because it gets quite a big laugh. But no, I didn't find that particularly funny. And equally, I'm afraid, I didn't find Jones' Tarzan antics, as Hodges calls them, funny in any way, shape or form. Him jumping on the bales every 5 minutes. And I think the writers must have realised this, because they even give Wilson a line about it, saying, "Do you honestly think he's going to be doing that all the time?"
Well, I think you actually see Jones knock off the bales or destroy the wicket, I don't know, I'm guessing about 7 or 8 times, I think.
Yeah. I don't find it funny. I'm sorry, I didn't find it funny.
I'm all right with that.
I think the actual portrayal of the cricket match itself is my least favourite aspect of this episode. My favourite ones being, as I've already mentioned, Pike bowling Mannerin out first time in training, and also at the very end where you get the air raid siren and you get the reminder that it is wartime.
Well, you are jumping ahead there, yes. But I agree. What about Godfrey trying to catch the ball, though? I mean, preparing him to try and catch the ball.
Very, very funny, considering he must have been just looking at the air, and someone was chucking a ball over his head from behind the camera, then I think it was quite funny. Although why would you play Godfrey as an outfielder? Yes, I think Ridley does really well there, and it certainly makes me smile when he's shaking almost when the ball's on its way to him.
A bit later on, when you see Godfrey running, when he's doing some of the runs between the wickets, I'm guessing that that was Godfrey that you see, isn't it? They didn't get a double. You don't actually see the face, but it definitely does look like Godfrey running.
Do you think he had a stunt double, perhaps?
It is possible.
I suppose it is possible. Well, I don't believe it was anyone other than Arnold Ridley. I think it was genuinely him taking part. And when you think, I believe there was a very small gap in age between John Lorre and Arnold Ridley. In fact, they may have even been the same age, give or take 12 months or so. I think they all did all of their own running and jumping, unless it was the more daring stunts, like the dangling off a bridge or something along those lines. But yes, I believe it was Arnold Ridley doing the running.
I think it probably was myself too. I'm just impressed. Mm. One question I have got, it's not really Dad's Army related, but Hodges declares, when it's 152 runs for 4 wickets, do you understand what declaring is all about?
I know what it means. I've got to be honest, I don't like cricket much anyway. My father took me to see a 2020 match last week. To be honest with you, I'd much rather watch this episode than have to sit through another 2.5 hours of cricket any day of the week. But yes, declaring is, I believe, and again, I'm sure someone else will correct us if we're wrong, when you believe that you're doing so well that it's possible that if you don't stop batting and let the other team start playing, that you could run out of time, and that would result in a draw. And if you declare early, then you give the other team the opportunity to finish their scoring before the deadline or before the end of the game, and hopefully not score as many as you.
I thought you'd know that, thank you.
But as I said, I don't like cricket, and I could have got that slightly wrong. So, I'll tell you what I did like. I did like Mr. Blewett's cameo appearance here.
Scoring with a pencil. I don't remember much about that.
That was it. I think you've remembered everything. But I think any time when Harold Bennett is in Dad's Army, he really does add something to it. And I'm glad they found small roles for him like that, and it helped intercut, because when you think filming a cricket match is going to be quite boring, really, hence the reason you get quite a number of different pieces of music in this episode, they intercut it with Mr. Blewett, which I thought was good, and they also intercut a couple of scenes I mentioned earlier with Walker and Fraser commenting on how bad the team were doing. And I thought they were really funny, and they reminded me a little bit of the two Muppets in the Muppet Show. That's right, sitting up in a balcony going, "Oh, I can't believe we've come here, this is terrible," you know. And I just thought it worked quite well, that part there. And later on, Walker is batting with a cigarette in his mouth as well, which just reminded me of Phil Tufnell, really. I thought he did really well there.
Well, this is another one of those episodes that doesn't end on a laugh, and deliberately so, because it ends they finish the match, but then suddenly the air raid siren goes off, and it's just another one of these reminders of the seriousness behind the comedy.
No, and I think they've done it really nicely, and especially when they all look to the sky, and you know, here they come, and again Mannering carries on and gets his platoon off the cricket field straight into their home guard activities, and I dare say that happens on several occasions, not necessarily through a sporting event, but when people are going about their everyday lives, all of a sudden the siren goes and that's it, they switch straight into home defence mode. And you're right, it wasn't on a laugh, and it finished, I wouldn't say poignantly, but it finished in a serious note, and I thought that worked really, really well.
Mm. So, overall, what score would you give this episode?
Well, not a very high one, because I would say over half of this episode I don't like, and that's mainly the cricket match, and you may have noticed, or the listener, you may have noticed I've talked about Jones very little this episode, is because I've got nothing positive to say about him. But on balance, I would say I liked half the episode, so I'll give it 50%, 2.5 out of 5 to me.
Okay, my memories of this episode, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it, but having watched it afresh, I'd give it 3.5.
Right, next time we'll be discussing the 2.5 feathers. So if you have any comments about that particular episode, then please feel free to email them, james@dadsarmypodcast.com. That's it for the Dad's Army podcast this week. We'll be back in a short while. Once again, I'm not entirely certain when the next edition will be online. The very longest it will be is a period of 4 weeks. If you'd like to get in contact with us in the meantime, then my email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. I always send responses to messages that we receive. When we do come back, we'll be discussing the 2.5 feathers, and I'll be joined once again by my good friend Claire. So feel free to send in any comments or MP3s that you have about that particular episode. In the meantime, keep safe, and I look forward to speaking to you in a couple of weeks' time. Crofton Perry Day 2008 was last month. It was held up at Brettingham Steam Museum. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there as planned, but Tony did attend. What were your feelings, Tony? Did you enjoy it?
I didn't.
Very good.
Pause. Okay.
You have been listening to episode 23 of the Dad's Army Podcast with your hosts, James and Tony. The Dad's Army Podcast is free to download. The owners make no commercial gain from it whatsoever. No infringements of any kind intended. If you have been affected by anything contained within this podcast, then a helpline has most definitely not been set up. We're very sorry. But you can contact us at the show at james@dadsarmypodcast.com.